Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. These are not the best of times for the honeybee. For the last decade, bee colonies, tamed and wild, have been dying off from coast to coast. Man may be the reason. But a growing army of humans are keeping bees, too. In the woods out back, by garden or orchard, even on noisy urban rooftops. It's part hobby, part mission to save the honeybee, and part back-to-the-land impulse. This hour on Point, bees and America's backyard beekeepers. You can join the conversation. Are you going for homegrown honey? Are you now raising bees? How? Why? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now are two backyard beekeepers. With me in the studio is Jane Wild, Wild Jane to her friends. She and her husband tend some 14 hives in West Newbury, Massachusetts. She also happens to be vice president of the Essex County Beekeepers Association. Jane, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you very much.
You and your honey, too.
Yes, my honey, too. I brought it with me.
We've got honey spread all across the table here in the studio and cannot wait to begin dipping in. With us as well from Kent, Ohio, is one of the very biggest names in American beekeeping. Kim Flottam is editor of Bee Culture magazine, writes a blog called thedailygreen.com, is a beekeeper himself with about a dozen hives on his property in Medina, Ohio. He's author of a couple of the Bibles of American beekeeping, The Backyard Beekeeper and The Honey Handbook. Kim, thanks very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. It's great to be here today.
We're honored to have you, sir. But tell us first, let's honor the bee itself. What's going on with disappearing bees? Where does that stand, Kim? We heard a lot about it a couple of years ago. Still hear dribs and drabs, but what's the status of our bee population in this country?
Well, today it's not looking so bad, but the last 4 or 5 years, it's been a tough time for bees and beekeepers. Some things are going on that have caused colonies to what they call colony collapse disorder, and that's where you suddenly see, when you're a commercial beekeeper, maybe half or two-thirds of your colonies just disappear. They fly out of the box and they don't come home. And when you own 20,000 colonies and you lose half, that's a pretty tough day for you.
And what's the theory of why it's happening? And do we know, is there a census of bees? Do we know what percentage hit the population's taken in North America?
Well, there's a group of people who each work for state departments of agriculture called the apiary inspectors, and the USDA honeybee researchers have joined forces each year, and they do a census of beekeepers and of especially of colonies. This past year, they found that about 34% of the bees were lost over last winter. And that's been about the same for the last 4 or 5 years, somewhere between 30 and 35%. And that's not a sustainable way to keep bees and a sustainable way to be in business. Traditionally, before this started, you were seeing somewhere in the neighborhood, now this is mostly with the commercial people, of course, but you're seeing somewhere in the neighborhood of 15 to 20%, and that's an acceptable loss because you have colonies that are weak and just aren't going to make it through a rough winter. But 35%, that gets a little tough.
Have we figured out the why?
Well, they're getting closer. And that's really, really promising. They within the last couple of weeks, there was a report that came out of the USDA people. They are looking at a bacteria that is infesting the bees, and at the same time, in conjunction with that, there is a virus and the two are synergistic. You can have one, you can have the other. You don't have much of a problem if you're a bee. But you get the two together, and then you've got a problem, and it's pointing a lot in that direction.
Now, Kim, I think you've seen, many people have seen, partly in response to this threat to bees, an awful lot of individuals picking up beekeeping. Have you seen the evidence?
Oh, it's been great the last few years. The continued media attention to colony collapse disorder and pollination and all of the things that go with that have gotten people's attention and kept people's attention. And pretty soon after a while, you begin to think, you know, this is something that we need to explore further and that maybe I could do. And I've got the yard or I've got the place. I've got a place on my roof for maybe a city garden. We can do this.
Beekeeper Jane with me here in the studio. You've been at this since long before the bee population started having trouble.
1991.
What took you to it in the first place? How did you decide to have, you know, what, you've got a dozen more hives in the backyard?
Well, we had friends that had taken the bee course at Topsfield Fairgrounds, and they said to us, you have to go and take this course. Not only is it fun, but they feed you at the break. And it was only $25, so it was a win-win situation.
$25 one day at the fair? And you know how to raise bees?
No, this was a course. It starts in February, uh-huh, and it goes until April. And the Essex County Beekeepers run it every year at the Topsfield Fairgrounds in our bee building.
What pulled you into, I mean, the whole idea, though? I mean, it's a responsibility to take on.
It is, but it was just fascinating to me that you could have this little colony of bees and that are so responsible for the food that we eat. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what hooked me. And then once you start keeping your own bees and you sit there, it's a good way to make your blood pressure just drop right down.
Because I suppose you've got to be sort of very cool and slow and still and at ease when you're working with the bees, even though you're all netted up.
That's correct. And you should work them very slowly. And if you like Kim, who was at my house this spring, you can work without gloves because you're such a good beekeeper.
No, because you're just so calm, and the bees sense that.
They do.
So you can get your hands right down in the hive without gloves, and they'll accept that?
They will. So, and some people are very good at that, and there are others that are not so good at it.
Do you have to meditate to become that kind of beekeeper?
I don't know, Kim. Do you meditate?
it's a practice thing, and you reach a comfort level, but the first times that you have a lot of bees crawling on your hands, it can be a little unnerving, but it's no different than picking up a cat. It's just nice and smooth and easy.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, I guess I know what you mean. I grew up with a lot of livestock, and you just get the hang of how to move with them and among them, and maybe bees are the same way. You've got 14 hives, Jane. How much honey does that mean?
Well, in a good year, last year was not a particularly good year. I don't know what the weather was like in Ohio where Kim was, but here in Massachusetts, you'll remember that the whole month of June rained. Mm-hmm. So any nectar that our bees had picked up in the month of May, mm-hmm, because they
big
were
month
stuck,
for nectar.
Yeah, big
mm-hmm
month for nectar, they were stuck inside and they had to feed on that. So it kind of brought our honey production down.
So in a good, decent year or average year, what's it like?
Well, if you could get a couple hundred pounds out of a hive, I think you're doing very well.
Out of each hive?
Out of each hive.
So you've got that times 14.
Well, I've never been that fortunate because I'm still since 91 trying to become a good beekeeper. But that's potentially what you could do.
We're going to taste honey in the course of this hour. And the very first one I've got ready to go on a spoon here is yours. Tell us about it. What can you tell us about what your bees feast on?
Well, the funny thing about this, Kim's more into the varietals, but we're more into what we consider just plain wildflower honey.
Wildflowers around your property.
Right.
So what does that mean? There's particular varieties of flower?
There's loosestrife in the fall and goldenrod. Mm-hmm. There are dandelions, all of the things that you would find by the roadside. And
I'm going to taste this right now. Am I going to taste dandelion?
No. Well, I don't know if you will. Give it a shot.
Mm-hmm. And kind of a light, on the light side color-wise. Mm, it's a little tart. Oh, it's got a little tart
edge.
This
is not mine. I just looked at the chat. This is Kim's.
Oh, wait. I've got spoon number two here. That's
do have number two.
I followed the chart.
You did. I'm in error.
No, but
Now, this is a creamed honey.
It's your own creamed honey.
It's my own creamed honey that coincidentally made itself in my bottling tank.
Oh, what does creamed mean?
Creamed is As opposed to liquid, it's more of a solid product.
But
it's
spreadable. In terms of making it, do you heat it more or less? Or
you have to take 1 pound of cream, which we call seed, to about 7 pounds of liquid.
And actual cream. Cream in here.
Yes. Cream. It's just the texture of the crystals, I think.
Okay.
So do you feel that smoothness on you, Tom?
I absolutely do. And of course, I guess I can taste wildflower.
Yeah.
Kim, do you go for creamed or straight?
Well, I do, but we do both. A creamed honey you've got there from Jane that mm-hmm. I was able to taste when I was at her house mm-hmm. earlier this spring. Mm-hmm. It's a nice smooth. If you make it right, it's a nice smooth. It's almost like butter on your tongue and the roof of your mouth.
Absolutely, with a very floral edge on that butter.
Mm-hmm. A lot of times people will get a jar of honey and they'll have it in the cupboard and they'll come back and see it in sometime and they'll say it's gone bad or it's sugared or it's crystallized. And what it's done is it's become creamed honey uncontrolled, however. And the crystals are large. And when you get to tasting mine there, you probably will find that that's exactly what you got. If you can do a side-by-side test, the honey you have from me, the crystallization wasn't controlled and it's not nearly as smooth and not nearly as easy to eat.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about bees, backyard beekeeping, and the hunger for home-grown honey. We went out of that last segment, if you heard us, with the wonderful Bobby McFerrin and Yo-Yo Ma, their Flight of the Bumblebee. That's pretty good stuff. We've got a lot of honey on the table here as well. Very good stuff indeed. Kim Flottam is with us. He's editor of Bee Culture magazine, joins us from Kent, Ohio, a beekeeper himself, kind of big guru in the beekeeping world. Jane Wild is with me right here in the studio with honey of her own, honey from around. We've got honey from all over. She's a backyard beekeeper based in West Newbury, Massachusetts. We're going to hear in just a moment from David Tarpey out of North Carolina. Now, Kim, I've been poised here with this spoonful of your honey right in front of me all the time. I'm going to taste it, and I actually cheated a little bit. Now, Kim, I would say that in this honey, I taste clover, basswood, milkweed, and raspberry nectars. Am I right?
You're right.
Oh,
I'm cheating.
Come on.
I'm cheating. You guys taste? I know that's what's in it from the notes here, but can you taste that when you eat the honey, Kim?
I can taste the mm-hmm. jar that you have. I can taste the clover, and I can taste the milkweed, and there's a little bit of raspberry in there. And all three mm-hmm. of those stand out to me because I'm looking for them, and I've been looking for the flavors of honey for more than 30 years. So. Mm. I don't want to say I'm a connoisseur, but I do enjoy a fine honey like you got right there.
Boy, that is fine. And you know what? I was joking because I thought it wouldn't be that easy, but I believe I can taste milkweed here. It's weird that one would know that taste, but we grew up always putting milkweed milk on warts and this and that as kids. Milkweed was all over the place. I can taste that there. Jane, do you?
I can't say that I do because I'm not familiar with the milkweed taste, but I'll take your word for it.
Mm-hmm. Wow, fantastic.
Delicious.
What's a proper way to do a tasting, Kim? I mean, is there a wine style, sort of proper tasting procedure?
Yeah, people get into it kind of like that sometimes. I've always enjoyed getting somebody into my kitchen like yourself, who's just beginning to appreciate the different flavors and mm-hmm. colors and textures of honey. And after about 15 minutes and 20 spoonfuls of honey, they have a sugar buzz that you wouldn't believe.
Oh, yeah. I can feel it already.
It's an educational experience, and already you've noticed that you've got three jars of honey, and you have three very different experiences.
I think we've got three or twice three here. The sort of soft crystal texture, this is wonderful as well. Wow, it's just great. I've got all kinds of people writing in here with different observations. Here's Mariana, says she's been keeping hives since 1993. She was diagnosed with MS. She used the bees uses them to sting herself to help with her MS. She took a Copaxone, or a drug, for a while, but went back to the bees because she can't afford the medicine. And that little big trick works for her. Here's Desiree. She says, I don't keep bees, but I have lots of flowers in my yard that bees like. Alyssum, guara, pentas. I love citrus blossoms. I love how the bees make the garden come alive, buzzing and flitting about. And then here's Janine. She says, they didn't set out to be beekeepers, but she says, we have a hive under our gazebo floor. I've had it for 3 years. Can't get the honey, but love having the bees. And this Jean Rains in Fort Wayne, Indiana, nearby, says, I'd really be interested in starting beekeeping, but don't know how to begin. How do you begin, Jane? I mean, is it complicated?
Well, we have a bee club, as I said, out of the Topsfield Fia, the Essex County Beekeepers. Mm-hmm. I would suggest that people go to the local extension service.
Agricultural Extension Service. I grew up seeing 4-H projects around honey all the time.
Yeah, Google something maybe in their area and see if they can come up with somebody that might be giving a bee course, which they tend to do over the winter time.
But does it take a big investment of money or, I mean, how steep is the learning curve?
We try to set people up with a mentor after they graduate from bee school, which is helpful because it can be a scary process. And it would probably cost, depending on where you live, anywhere from $100 to $300 to set up your first hive, including your bees. I think 3-pound packages, what we call nukes, are running about $85 in this area.
You just order off, they come in the mail, and you off you go.
You order them from someone locally that sells them, which we have several of those people in that mm-hmm. area, mm-hmm. and they set you up with your own very own nuke.
Wow, nuke, as in nuclear
nucleus.
Colony,
nucleus.
A nucleus of the colony.
Exact, about a 3-pound pack with a queen.
Jane Wild, Wild Jane is with us with her honey, and we've got more. Kim Flottoms here from Kent, Ohio, and we're joined right now as well from Durham, North Carolina, by David Tarpey, one of the country's top bee researchers, more formally an apiculturist and entomologist, teaches and raises queen bees and teaches about them as part of his research at North Carolina State University. A lot of his work has been focused on queen honeybees and the colony collapse disorder. David Tarpey, it's absolutely great to have you with us. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
What's important for us to know about queens when it comes to bees?
Well, queens are the mother of the entire colony. So a honeybee colony is nothing more than a close-knit family. And there's only one single queen within each colony, within each hive. And she is the mother to all of the individuals, all of the 50,000 or so bees that are within that colony. So the typical bee that we see flying out on flowers mm-hmm. and collecting Kim and Jane's nice honey,
right.
Those are all her daughters. The typical bee that we see are all females, as well as the males or the drones in the colony. So a colony is nothing more than a close extended family.
No, but the queen herself, if I read you correctly, David, she has to get out and mate with lots of drones and preferably very diverse drone populations, at least like she'll mate with a dozen or so, but not just in that close family.
Yeah, that's correct. She does not mate with the drones inside the hive. That would be mating with her own brothers, mm-hmm. and obviously that is not good for inbreeding.
Genetically.
Genetically.
So how does she do it? She actually flies out, searches mm-hmm. for mates?
Yeah, that's right. They actually, the queens fly about a mile from the hive to ensure that, she is not going to be mating with her nearby relatives. And they mate on the wing about 30 to 50 feet up in the air at these places known as drone congregation areas, which is where all of the males from nearby hives tend to gather very closely.
Just midair or in a tree?
Midair.
Or midair. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. if I were to see this going on, what would I see if I looked up? And what would I see 30 feet up in the air?
Well, you'd probably have to get into a hot air balloon or something in order to see it that closely. But what you would see is queens flying through at about 25 miles an hour or mm-hmm. so, being chased by literally a comet of drones, almost like a Tom and Jerry cartoon, pursuing her, smelling her pheromones, and all trying to mate with the queen.
To be the one. Is this 100 drones or 1,000 or...
There are thousands of drones in these areas, and the queen tends to mate on average with about 12 drones before returning back to her colony. She mates when she's very very young in her life, when she's about a week old, and that then is enough for her to fertilize all of the eggs over her 2 to 3 year lifetime.
Kim, have you seen it? I mean, Jane, have you seen it with the naked eye?
No.
Hard to spot.
I just know about the process.
and I suppose that the fall off in bee population then, David, must be a big deal here because the queen needs to go out and find a diverse mating population.
Well, exactly right. And that is one of the areas that researchers have been exploring to see if there has been any genetic bottlenecking in the honeybee population that may account for colony ill health and other subsequent problems. One thing about the matings of queens and the genetics of honeybees in general is that it's invisible. And so it takes quite an extended effort to try to uncover the indirect effects of the importance of genetics.
We're going to talk about backyard beekeeping more and more in this hour and have some more of this wonderful-looking honey. But remind us how the commercial beekeeping works in the U.S. that so much of our food supply depends on. I mean, backyard too, but the big commercial industrial agriculture depends very often on what? Big trucks. How's that work, David?
Well, you're absolutely right. The commercial production agriculture in the U.S., about 100 or so different crops, depend on beekeepers to transport in hives into fields and orchards during the bloom period in order for the bees to carry pollen from one blossom to another. That then enables seed and then fruit set. And so most of this is done by literally a handful of commercial beekeepers, some of which have tens of thousands of hives each that move up and down the coasts and east and west following the blooms in these contractual agreements with growers and farmers.
And what about on the backyard beekeeping front? Have you seen the surge that everybody's talking about in the number of people doing it?
Absolutely. There's no doubt, and it's been wonderful to see. While most of the hives in the United States belong to a small handful of these large-scale commercial beekeepers, most of the beekeepers in the U.S. are hobbyist beekeepers, or what we like to say part-time beekeepers, because even part-time beekeepers still provide a tremendous service, ecosystem service of pollination to nearby flowers. There's been a real resurgence in people wanting to keep bees, even 2 to 5 hives, and there's been a real uptick in people getting back to beekeeping.
We've got beekeepers buzzing all around us here. I better get to some of them. Let's go to Pawtucket, Connecticut. Oliver. Oliver, you're on the air.
Hey, hello, everybody.
Oh, Pawtucket. Pawtucket, I should say. Hi, Oliver. Are you keeping bees?
Yes, I am. I'm in my third year of backyard beekeeping. I have now 9 hives, and I've been listening to the show, and I agree with everything. And you guys touch on a point that the genetic diversity of the bees is what's important to their survival. And I think that the role of the backyard beekeeper, especially somebody like myself, I don't use any chemicals to help the hives combat parasites.
Okay.
So I believe that my drones, when they fly out of my hives and go to their drone congregation areas,
mm-hmm.
Probably help bring more resistance to the mites mm-hmm. that we have, or the parasites that we have.
No doubt mm-hmm. about it. I wonder, in the actual caring for your 9 hives, Oliver, you're 3 years in, how many hours a week do you spend on it in the height of your beekeeping season?
Well, I think the first year you tend to spend a lot of time on there, and because you don't really know what's happening. And then as it goes, you tend to leave the bees do what they do best and check on them just once in a while. For example, my mite treatment, I used powdered sugar, and I'm sure your panel can explain how that's used. But I only do it 3 times in a year. At the end of the flow that's on now, I'll give them one treatment, and then 10 days afterwards, I'll give them another treatment. And then in the fall, when the queen has stopped laying, then all the brood is out of the comb, then I give them one more treatment just before they go into the winter.
And is it satisfying for you, for your family, Oliver?
Oh my God, it's wonderful. You always have something to give for Christmas or birthdays. You can always give honey or bee pollen. There's the wax. There's propolis. The propolis I used to have a athlete's foot. I'm in construction. I get cuts and nicks, and I put propolis.
Propolis is right like the tree rosin that they bring home. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the bee glue, the stuff that they get from trees, and it's unbelievable. I mean, everything that comes out of a hive is so wonderful and so natural.
Oh, Oliver, I'm so glad for your call. Long may your bees fly and bring you the propolis and all the rest. Jane, is that about the kind of time you're spending on your hive? And this time, when do you actually pull honey out of there?
We're probably getting ready to, because there's such a clam for it from customers that we have, and we have actually run out from our supply for last year. Mm-hmm. So we'll probably be extracting within the next 2 to 3 weeks.
And that means open up the hive, get your mitts down in there.
We'll be pulling those honey supers off, taking them into the kitchen, setting up the extracting equipment, and then taking those wet supers and throwing them back on so they can continue gathering more nectar.
Well, how much of the comb and the honey do you pull out? Half? All? Or I have no idea.
A frame, the way that we run it, a honey super contains 9 frames, and hopefully each and every one of them is filled with honey and capped over. And we have to take that into the house, uncap it, put it in the extractor through centrifugal force, which takes the honey out, and then it goes right into our honey tank. We have a 200-pound tank in our kitchen.
Wow, that's more than a coffee maker, I'd say.
Yes, certainly a point of conversation when guests come for dinner.
No doubt, and people doing this all over the country. We've got more honey to taste here. And Kim Flottam in Ohio, I think you've got some of the same here. I'm looking at this winter white. This is made from wildflowers along the Idaho-Montana border. They call it naturally crystallized, made by one small commercial beekeeper. What do you think of this taste?
I like the taste. I also like the texture a lot, Tom.
Very creamy, buttery almost.
Mm. Yep. And that's...
Oh, boy.
It is nice.
That is
fantastic.
That's
what I was referring to earlier is when you control the crystallization process, mm-hmm. when this sets up, if you do it right and you control the temperature and you control the rest of the environment that the honey is in,
how much do you heat it, Kim, before it goes in the jar?
A lot of people don't heat it at all, and that's my recommendation. Some recipes call for heating it so that most honey has some naturally born yeasts in it, mm-hmm. and people try and get rid of those. Other people say it's natural and it should be in there, so they don't heat it at all. The more you heat honey, anything over about 100 degrees, which is what you're going to find inside of a colony on a warm day,
mm-hmm.
anything over 100 degrees and the honey begins to degrade. You lose some of the aromatics and some of the flavor and some of the stuff that makes honey really good.
Is there such a thing as raw honey? What is raw honey then, Kim?
That's exactly what raw honey is. It's honey that's been like Jane does. She spins it out of the frame. There's no heat applied. She'll run it through, probably, Jane, I'm guessing you run it through a coarse filter, which just if there's any pieces of wax
some
that fall
bee legs
in there.
And wings
in
the process.
We're getting back to nature now. We've got to take a short break here. Our tongues are coated with wonderful Idaho, Montana honey, winter white. Thanks to, I should say, to the Savannah Bee Company for giving us some of these samples. They're just terrific. Jane Wild with me in the studio. Kim Flottam in Kent, Ohio, and David Tarpey in Durham, North Carolina. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
Bring us back to our own little hive. Oh, my other honey bee, no longer stuck where he doesn't want to be. Oh, my darling honey bee, I have saved you, and now that you're with me, we can make our own honey.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about bees, backyard beekeeping, and the hunger for homegrown honey. And man, are we getting some terrific honey as well in this hour. Jane Wild is with me in the studio. She's a backyard beekeeper based in West Newbury, Massachusetts. And she's got some terrific honey out of her own hives there in Durham, North Carolina. David Tarpey's here, teaches and raises queen bees as part of his research at North Carolina State University, encourages beekeeping in that area. And Kim Flotham, a big figure in beekeeping nationally, joins us from Kent, Ohio. He's editor of Bee Culture magazine, writes a blog called thedailygreen.com. He's got about a dozen hives of his own on a property in Medina, Ohio, author of The Backyard Beekeeper. You can join us if we can pull ourselves away from some of this honey. Let's get one more while we're at it. Here, there's some comb here. Also, compliments of Savannah Bee Company. And this is Florida honey. Kim, I think you've got some of this. Talk to us about, who eats honey from the comb and who from the jar. I grew up with an awful lot of comb, but who goes where?
Well, comb honey is honey the way the bees raised it. It's untouched by human hands. It is the best honey that you can get, bar none, period. And Florida is a big producer of comb honey in the United States. I'm trying to get this container open here as I'm talking.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've got some going right here. It's got oranges just popping out of it. And you're
delicious.
Doesn't it, Jane? I mean, talk about tastes like Florida. Who needs a vacation? Just eat this.
Exactly. You're right there.
I feel like I'm in the Grove, and this isn't even the orange blossom. Well, maybe it is. I don't know. From the Central Ridge. Excuse me. Sorry. In Central Florida. Do you know that area, David Tarpey?
In fact, orange blossom is my favorite honey, and don't think that it actually tastes like orange per se. It does have that kind of floral essence to it, but it's a very nice, smooth, it just feels great on the tongue.
Mm. Jane, how do you like to eat it? In the comb, out of the comb, different occasion, what?
I've been known to eat so much comb with honey while we're extracting that I'll get a sore throat because honey contains hydrogen peroxide.
What?
It naturally occurring in honey, so when I'm busy taking the uncapping knife to get ready for extracting, I'm just popping that honeycomb right into my mouth, chewing on it, and it's going right down the throat, and I end up with a sore throat.
Oh, wow. That's a lot of honey
well
to get that that cleansing. Boy, that is just terrific. Mark in Maynard, Massachusetts. Mark, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Great topic. I have an interesting story. Yesterday morning, I came out of my yard I keep some backyard chickens for about a year now, and I was checking out the hens in the morning, and I walked over to a mulberry tree, and I saw an ordinary number of bees sort of buzzing around the tree.
Okay.
And I looked, and I have adjacent to that a pine tree. I looked in the back of the pine tree, and there was just a massive clump of honeybees, a feral swarm, hanging off of my pine tree. And I freaked out a little bit.
A feral swarm. It sounds freaky. Okay.
And they're all hanging on each other, off of a branch. And so I went inside. I called my neighbor who keeps bees and said, "Mac, your bees are on my tree." And he said, "No, I don't think they're mine." So did some research. I had a choice to make. I was either going to call a pest control guy or get a hive. So I did some research on the web and found New England bees and talked to a guy named Ron up there. And about 2 o'clock yesterday, went up and bought a full kit for about $200 and brought it home, put the bees in the hive. But I don't think I cut some branches off the tree and got them in there. But I don't think I got the queen because a few hours later, they were all back on the tree.
A lot of work, but no ultimate score. So do you think you're going to end up with any of these, Mark? Or are they going to fly their own wild way?
Well, what I did is I did some more research that you can seed a hive by using lemongrass oil. So I called up the local natural food store. They stayed open late. I went and got some. I seeded the hive. By flashlight last night, I was cutting more branches off the tree.
Oh, my gosh.
Put them in there.
Yeah.
And as of 8 o'clock this morning, I am Massachusetts' newest backyard beekeeper.
You think you've got the queen, they're sticking around?
Well, the first rays of light, I read up on how to orient the hive, and I pointed them toward the sun, and I put them behind a tree so they have something to fly over. And, the hive was just all abuzz and looked like they had landed and found a home.
David Tarpey in Durham, North Carolina, what's your advice for Mark here, lassoing wild bees?
Well, I just want to congratulate him for choosing option B rather than option
right. No, send away.
It used to be that we in extension and in the bee world used to get a lot of calls saying, oh, there are bees in my attic. How do I kill them? With the discussion and the real kind of public awareness of the plight of honeybees in recent years, those calls have been coming in and been saying, well, I have bees in my yard, but I know that they're in trouble. Who can I call to come save them? And so, you know, I think that's a really excellent paradigm shift that we've seen to really try and help our beleaguered bees.
And what is it, Kim, if you start with a feral swarm of bees, is it just as if you started with one you sent away for? Is it just as good, better?
Actually, it's probably a little bit better just starting out because they are all, all the bees and the queen in the swarm are all from the same hive, so they all know each other. And and they all sort of have a purpose. Once they leave the hive, their goal is to get to a new place and get started, get all their comb drawn, get as much food gathered as they can possibly gather, raise as many bees as they can raise all before winter sets in.
So you're working with them in a way. They want to set up and get going.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the more you can do for them, the better chance they have of making it through the winter. So my advice is help them find food and get some food on them and give them all the help you can give.
Mark, how did you suit up for this project of getting bees into a box, Mark? Did you have a beekeeper's costume at the ready?
I did, yeah. My neighbor loaned me a Tyvek suit and one of those mesh hats, and I put a couple sets of gloves on. I did get one sting through my first set of gloves, so I went and found another set. My hand is still a little swollen and sore this morning. But other than that, you know, honestly, we were out there most of the day with the kids playing in the yard. You know, kids are wildly curious, especially about this huge, massive clump of bees hanging on the tree.
Oh, yeah. Oh,
no,
what excitement.
Nobody got stung. Nobody got stung. I mean, the only reason I got stung is because I was in there with my hands and my loppers taking branches off of my pine tree.
What a picture. You know. You're a brave soul, and you deserve a sweet future. So do your bees. I appreciate your call. Jane, what do you think of that story?
I think it's great, but make sure you feed those bees, Mark. Give them a leg up.
Feed them what?
Sugar water, right now. 1-to-1 right now.
Okay, there you go. Advice straight from the keeper. Jeff in Owensboro, Kentucky. You're on the air, Jeff.
Hello, this is a big coincidence. I'm just starting out as a hobby backyard beekeeper.
Great.
And I have friends that have a lot of hives in their watermelon and pumpkin patches, so I've kind of wanted to pick up a hobby, so I started gathering supplies, and I know there's a lot of benefits in local honey for allergies, and I have seasonal allergies, so I'm looking forward to getting started. And I just wondered what type of problems I'm going to encounter disease-wise, and when would it be a good time to actually start getting bees? I have one base, and just really starting out. So,
no, let us pick it up, David. What's your advice to Jeff and his family there in Owensboro, Kentucky?
Well, I think that that Jane touched on this before, and that one of the best things you can do is not worry about worst-case scenarios when you're just starting out, but rather team up with a local beekeeping organization or with the mentor beekeeper, and they can assuage any fears that you might have and kind of work you through those first learning curves. It used to be that you could just be a bee-haver, that is, you didn't actually mess with the bees at all. You just went in once a year and took some honey off,
right.
and that was it. But with the issues that bees are facing now, one has to be really an active beekeeper in order to promote bee health. And the easiest and best way to do that is to team up and kind of make it a group activity and learn from others.
Do you mean, and Jane, you're nodding your head, but is that to keep ahead of bacteria, viruses, that active beekeeping part?
Well, when you're a new keeper, a new beekeeper, the best thing we have found, it's kind of daunting, is to find a mentor from a beekeeping club. And there are a lot of us out there, and it's our goal to promote the honeybee.
But the challenge is what, keeping disease at bay?
The
is
disease
that
at bay,
active?
And for me, it's not to medicate my hives, which I'm going into my seventh year of...
That makes you something like an organic beekeeper,
exactly.
I guess. Except, of course, they can eat whatever they want when they're flying.
Well, exactly. But when they're out there flying. So
what does medicate mean? Antibiotics or something?
Yes. Some people do use medication for the bees in their hives.
Okay. But you don't?
I do not.
Right, right.
No.
Lots more here. Mark, Marion, South Carolina. Mark, you're on the air.
I just wanted to share a story. Our family farm of 200 years or so, we've enjoyed what we call our honey for about 80 years. Up until recently, we had a fellow come down from Ithaca, New York, to harvest the bees, and then he would, it was always mysterious, but he'd harvest the honey from up north, and we would always get as a treat honey from our farm.
Right,
he always
sent back.
Bees is having a sort of a honeymoon down in South Carolina, but then he'd go up, you know, up north and actually
process
the honey. But it was sad for us. We don't have it. We're guarding the last containers of honey very carefully.
Why have you sold the farm, or why is it wrapping up, Mark?
No, he just described it as the bees. It relates to the population decline, and of course, you know, it was the only stop he'd make down here. He'd drive down with his equipment and then go back up, but he just said it was becoming so non-productive, I suppose, that even it was a hobby for him, but it became such that he just couldn't justify doing it anymore.
Wow.
Very sad for us, and we hope to get someone new, maybe more locally, to come in and manage the area for us.
We wish you luck with that. After 80 years, you don't want to let it go. I mean, Kim Flottam, what do you hear in that story? That's kind of a scary tale. 80 years of beekeeping just suddenly not worth it, gone?
From a backyard beekeeper's perspective, it can be tricky. You know, one of the other things that goes on is that I'm not as young as I used to be, and beekeeping is there's lifting and there's moving and there's, you know, it's a task out in the backyard. So
Jane is nodding vigorously
yes.
here.
that can begin to enter in also, and of course it's, you know, just living isn't as inexpensive as it used to be. I think Jane hit on something, and Dave was talking about it earlier, is that, you know, bees are like any other animal. Your cats or dogs or chickens, you know, they all got other things that are going to bother them, diseases and pests, and a beekeeper's job is to make sure that they don't get the upper hand. You don't have to treat all the time, but you got to watch them and shepherd them through the season so that they don't suffer and they don't catch any of these things, or if they do get them, that you're on top of the situation, taking care of them so that they can handle it themselves.
David Tarpey, you heard one of our callers talk there about what he hoped for in terms of allergy benefits. Is there evidence for that? If you're eating local honey, is there some kind of allergy, you know, alleviation, David?
Well, eating local honey is purported by some to really alleviate hay fever and local allergies. I say that I'm a PhD doctor, not the rich kind, so I'm not going to comment on the medical side of things. But from what I understand, there really isn't great medical evidence either way, but there are many, many people that swear by that. And one of the real keys to that is to be eating local honey, not honey that was imported from overseas, not eating honey that, if you live in the Northeast, eating honey from the desert Southwest. What you want is that, roadside stand, farmer's market, local honey, and preferably as raw or as unprocessed as possible.
That seems to be where the demand is. I can't resist a little more of this. Here's some orange blossom straight up from Loxahatchee, Florida. We're going to taste a little bit of this and go to Mary Helen. Mary Helen in Harvard, Massachusetts. Mary Helen, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I've been a backyard beekeeper for, 11 years now. Started off with one hive, then two, because it was just a little bit more work, and then three. And now, because of a swarm, I have eight.
Yes.
As a female beekeeper, I think I nurture maybe a little bit more than male beekeepers. I know I don't practice matricide anymore. I don't kill queens just to get genetic diversity. I love my bees. They are so fascinating. The more I learn about them, the more excited I am.
And a swarm's just showed up, Mary Helen, which means you had, they just sort of moved into your apartments?
I'm sorry, the swarm?
The swarm, what happens? Just show up and move into your house?
Yeah, the swarm.
Oh, I see. But you coaxed on home, and you feel as a, what, it pulls out something of your female power here, or what is it?
Maybe. I mean, that could be it. But they're just fascinating just from the more we learn about them, the more exciting it is to me. And I do get honey, which I love. And but I've learned, for example, it's females who do all the work. And then the drones are there for one thing. And the ones who do get to do that one thing, well, they die. And the rest of them get killed out, left out in the fall.
Sounds like life as we know it. Mary Helen, I'm really grateful for your call, and just to picture you in the midst of all that is a wonderful thing. We get one last taste here. Tupelo honey, the famous Tupelo honey. Where's Tupelo honey from, Dave Tarpey?
I believe it's usually
right on the Georgia-Florida,
right?
Yeah, Florida, yeah, Georgia-Florida right. border. Tupelo yeah. trees, I guess, Kim?
Mm-hmm.
And, Tupelo trees, yes, absolutely. And Dave has it right. Tupelo honey is very southern Georgia, northern Florida.
Yeah. Smoky.
Think Yulee's Gold.
Mm. Exactly. That was the gold in Yulee's Gold movie.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. What are you anticipating, Kim, given the trends we see in beekeeping? Do you still see this surge going on? Got a lot of back-to-the-land kind of sentiment in this country. Do you see more beekeepers out there in the years ahead?
I think you hit the right word, surge. One of the things that we're doing through our magazine is we're looking for people who are living in a situation where they can't keep bees, where cities are saying, no, you can't keep bees, and we're working with those beekeepers trying to get those laws overturned. Mm-hmm. We're finding out that people are looking at beekeeping, and you know, 20 years ago they looked at it as a threat, and now they're looking at it not so much. So Serge is right. I've enjoyed the last 3 years more than the last 20, I think, because of it.
Well, we've got here a post on the web from Sweet Man. I'm a backyard beekeeper, a bandit backyard beekeeper, because I don't want my neighbors to know. I don't want the city to know. I just want the bees to pollinate and survive. They do very well, says Sweet Man, in the city, and we hope all over the place. What a pleasure to have all of you with us today. David Tarpey at North Carolina State University, joining us from Durham, North Carolina. Happy honey eating and happy bee raising, David. Thanks for being with
us. Thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Kim Flottam, editor of Bee Culture Magazine. Wonderful to have you, Kim.
Thanks.
And Jane Wild with me right here in the studio, local bee gal extraordinaire. Thanks so much, Jane.
It was a pleasure. I had a blast.
We'll go out with Joe Strummer and the Mescaleros singing Johnny Appleseed. He needed bees, too. Listeners, thanks for joining us. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.